I think Bitcoin is new wine that deserves new wineskins. Bitcoin is a completely giant, brand new paradigm that the world is going to have to wrestle with. And because the ruling class of today can no longer manipulate the bottom layer. Currently, the ruling class of today manipulates the bottom layer of how money and how wealth works.
Hello, everyone. I'm John Schnow, and welcome to episode 5 of the Bitcoin Path podcast. This is a show where we have deeper conversations about Bitcoin and self-sovereignty, about how this new magic internet money is changing the world and changing ourselves at the same time. I'm thrilled to have Brian Harrington join me for today's pod. Brian is the organizer of the Orange County Bitcoin Network, which meets every Thursday in Anaheim, California. He is an elected official for the Orange County Republican Party Central Committee. And more importantly, he helps entrepreneurs and small business owners retain their independence and their sovereignty by accepting Bitcoin through settlement with BTC Pay Server. He's a proud husband, and he's a Jesus follower. I really enjoyed this chat with him. Having met Brian in California when I was visiting family down there, I just have to attest that he is the real deal. He's just an awesome, genuine guy. I consider him a close friend and really enjoyed this chat. Be sure to follow him on Twitter at Brian Harrington and check out his website, brianharrington.org. Before I get into this talk, I just want to let you know about the Cosmic Deep Dive online event coming up this weekend, December 12th and the 13th. It's an online Bitcoin conference, and it's an opportunity for you to deepen your understanding of Bitcoin in a compressed amount of time with some of the most well-respected educators in the space. If you're interested in joining, you can register for the event at cosmicdeepdive.com. The speakers are going to be Robert Breedlove, Gigi, Dan Held, Max Hillebrand, Eric Kaysen, and John Ballas. There are going to be 6 sessions, 3 on Saturday, 3 on Sunday, and it starts at 11 a.m. Central Time. And if you can't make all of the sessions, these sessions will be recorded. And if you register for the event, you can go back and watch them at your leisure at any time. So even if you can't view any of the events at all this weekend, you can still register, and once they are recorded, you'll be able to go back and watch them. This is going to be a one-of-a-kind opportunity. I honestly do not know how long these guys are going to be available to do things like this in this boutique fashion. So I think it's an exciting opportunity. I'm really looking forward to it, and I hope to see you there. And with that, let's get into my conversation with Brian Harrington. We can just kick it off if you're cool with that. Do you have any hard time constraints or anything like that?
No.
You gotta keep in mind?
Okay. Nope. You're my guy.
All right. Well, Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. Thanks for doing this. Listen to your first episode. I love your just intentionality, and I'm trying to just come at Bitcoin from the same perspective, just really trying to keep my friends and family in mind and break it down in whatever way, you know, they helps them to hear it.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. It's, that's really the essence of it. And I really, you know, appreciate your perspective on that as well. Trying to reach people just by understanding where they're at, what their needs are, communicating like how Bitcoin can actually help their situation in a really powerful way. So yeah, I re-listened to your episode with Marty Bent, who was, you know, really instrumental in my initial kind of traveling down the rabbit hole earlier in March. And that conversation in particular really inspired me, because I was in, you know, sort of a depressed, darkened state, so to speak, like a lot of us were at that point.
Yeah. No. Look, the lockdowns have been really tough on me too. Like even taking, I mean, Bitcoin is in my head now, and so it's obviously I look at it through that lens. But no, just in general, I can't remember if I told Marty that day, but no, these lockdowns have fully changed my perspective about politics forever. Because I used to look, I was that student government kid in school. You know, I got elected to my class president because I thought that was how, you know, you help people. And then afterwards, like look, Bitcoiners will appreciate this. Like I kept, you know, working on political campaigns even after college too. And I have a picture with Neil Kashkari from 2015 helping him run for governor of California. And I just look back on that and I just think, what was I doing? What was I doing? Why was I helping this guy, you know, try to climb up this political ladder? And then, so we can go off on all the finance things about Neil Kashkari and all that or whatever, but then just bringing it back down to the lockdowns, it should be embarrassing to city council members and to county supervisors that restaurants and barbershops are meeting on the sidewalk. That should be embarrassing. This is the United States of America. Why are businesses, why is it made illegal to turn a key and go into your place of business and do business? That's crazy to me. And the word crazy has just been watered down and overused and all these things. And everyone has different opinions about the lockdowns and everything is fine. But at a fundamental level, that's completely changed my perspective of politics. And so now I just think I'm even more hardened in my belief that we need solutions outside of politics, apolitical solutions that just cut through everything.
I'm with you. Just the fact that you need to, as a business, to interact and engage in commerce, to ask permission from some like governing body, just to have someone come into your property and engage, and like sell them food. Like when did it become the case that we have to like include some other arbitrary entity in this like very personal, very natural process that all of us go through, like in every day of our life? Like, yeah, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense at all to me.
Yeah. I don't know. And I mean,
I'm sure we can just rant about that for a long time.
Totally. And I don't want to come across again to like friends and family listening that, I'm not an angry guy. Like I'm not a depressed guy. You know, Bitcoin gives me a lot of optimism and I can go through a lot of those things. But just wanted to just relate with you and share that, you know, I felt the exact same, you know, way earlier this year. That's more where that's coming from. So regardless of, you know, people agree with me in that my perception of the way I'm breaking it down or whatever, just sharing that this year has been really hard on me, you know, mentally too.
Right. Yeah. It's been a mental and emotional whirlwind for a lot of people. And It's saddening to see how some people are reacting and thinking that they're kind of slipping into depression or thinking that they need to go along with these measures and these things, these top-down orders that are supposedly for their own good. Yeah, it's heartening. It's really encouraging to see guys like you and to talk with other people and to get a message out where I'm just having like natural conversations with people who are using critical thinking skills to, you know, think about like, well, what the fuck is actually going on? Do we have to believe everything that these people are telling us? Are they just telling us things because they want us to believe these things? Are these things actually true? Asking very basic questions like that should, to me, makes a lot of sense. And dude, I'm just so excited to be able to talk to someone like you. I think it's funny that we get to know people on the internet and, you know, listen to each other's podcasts or see things happen and then we like talk in real life and it's like talking to like a cartoon character in some ways. Do you ever feel that way?
Yeah. You mean the other people, like just other people that aren't Bitcoiners when you're talking to them in real life?
Other people who, no, like other Bitcoiners for me, like,
oh yes,
because most of the people that I talk to in real life aren't necessarily right. Bitcoiners. So like for me, it's this sort of trippy experience going and talking to actual real Bitcoiners.
Yeah. No, dude. Well, what I've experienced, and we can talk about just the power of Bitcoin meetups, is I've experienced that when I meet Bitcoiners in real life, they're the exact same as when I'm tweeting with them or talking over video conference with them or listening to them on the podcast. And honestly, that's been really refreshing. Honestly, really, really super refreshing, because I think some people are afraid to just get down in the comments and just figure it out and, you know, act differently on the internet. And so, yeah, to me, I've been really thankful to like be able to meet people over the internet and then go on to meet them, you know, in real life. Like to me, Twitter, this will sound funny, but Twitter has completely changed the course of my life. Like Twitter has been an incredible power for good in my life. And it's introduced me. I've been hired over Twitter. I've met some of my best friends over Twitter. It's just, I hang out there for, you know, 7 hours a day. It's crazy. And then mixing in the real life encounters and talking about, you know, the Bitcoin circular economy kind of, and how I've been trying to, you know, move Bitcoin into, you know, my local community. It all comes from Twitter. Like the excitement is what keeps me like going over there too.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I want to get into that. So you're in Orange County. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, I grew up in Orange County. I lived there in Laguna Hills for a long time.
I mean, I can tell from the hair and the surfboards, definitely. So it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, man. It's I love it there. I feel like it's like no other place. All the people, everyone. It's funny being in Chicago. I'll talk to people out here and they're like, yeah, we can definitely tell you're from California. But then then when I'm back in California now, people think I'm from Chicago. They think I'm like not from there, and I don't know. It's funny, yeah. But so you're in Anaheim, and you're actively engaged in helping businesses there transition. I like what you say. You're helping them update the money their yeah. money protocol.
Yeah, I used to use the word switch. I used to say switch to Bitcoin, but I just kept, you know, switch is very. People don't want to switch. You know, they want to stick with what they know, and people don't. But the word upgrade or the word update, that's a lot more kind of in the vein of what people are used to hearing. And using the word update and using the word upgrade also, it forces me to always remind myself that, look, Bitcoin is software. We can, and that's what people need to realize and remember too, is If you hear about Bitcoin, you know, solely through a finance lens and solely through a money or an investment lens, you know, you're going to get one perspective of it. If you hear about it only from a software perspective, you know, you're going to lose out on a lot of the revolutionary, you know, aspects of it also. So like me, because I've been more of an, you know, an economics guy, the philosophy guy of, you know, reasons for getting into Bitcoin. So me purposefully forcing myself to mm-hmm. use software language helps me to stay in the right lane of just talking about it as an overarching thing. So yeah, I've been mm-hmm. able to kind of connect some dots together, and I've got a pretty decent pitch going on, you know, when I meet with small businesses, explaining what Bitcoin is and explaining the benefits that they can get, you know, by updating to better money.
Right. I know how that process can go, and especially around the technical side of things, trying to improve that and just gain better understanding of that so that you can present it well and exercise, use the technology the best possible in your own life too. As I've been engaging with BTCA Pay server, trying to set it up for my own website, and everything. It's like this, man. It's a little daunting. It's daunting at first because you're like, ah, oh, this is so important. I want to get this going, but there are some hurdles here. There are some steps to just go through this process and find out, for one, what the process is going to be for my particular setup and my situation, and then execute it, and then hope it works, and then test it, and then re-implement it if it doesn't.
Yeah. It's 100% daunting. I felt the same way when I learned BTC Pay Server, and I just wrote a thread the other day of all the steps that it took me to learn how to run a Bitcoin node for the first time. And it's I don't know how long it was, you know, but seven or eight tweets full of just different bullet points of things that I tried and the path that I went on, you know, actually running the Bitcoin software inside my own house and having my own mobile wallet validating against, you know, the node that runs in my house. And it's for sure a process, absolutely a process. And on top of that, because there's this constant tension between open source developers and between users of software that aren't used to using open source products. So there's always this tension in Bitcoin of almost the more clean that an app feels, you know, there's going to be trade-offs about the, I want to find a better word than sovereignty, but just how much control you have over your money, you know? And because, and so when you hear Bitcoiners talk about taking full custodial ownership of their Bitcoin, that just means fully you own it. And that's a weird concept because there's nothing else digitally, and a lot of times even physically, that you as a human are able to have full 100% control ownership of. And that's a really eye-opening experience. And then that's what sends Bitcoiners down all these other theoretical and philosophical, you know, tangents that they get on, is because you realize that, you know, you don't fully own anything. And that's weird.
Yeah, I was having a conversation with my brother actually a couple days ago, who listened to one of my other pods, and he's like, okay, I get it. I want to start learning. And I was trying to explain to him the importance of self-custody and why, you know, why it's important, but also like how to approach it. Yeah, it's very different. Like, we're not used to dealing with money in this way. We're used to being able to trust other people to care for it. And, you know, it's kind of like you have a house and you need to, like, the only way that you can keep ownership of the house is by defending it from all the looters, all the people who want to come and, you know, break in. And you have to build a wall around it. You have to, you know, secure it. But it's not like, and it's not a giant house that you can just like, that, you know, is there. It's in the ether. It's information that you can lose very easily as well. So,
why
it's very different.
That's why knowing the philosophy and knowing the why is super important. I don't look past that at all. You know, if you can just listen and listen and listen and read books and understand the importance of the why of Bitcoin, that's what will get you over the hurdles. Cause we all are at different technical stages, and that is a reality. That is a reality and a friction of learning, you know, how to use Bitcoin is wherever you start from, on how comfortable you are with computers and how comfortable you are with, you know, phones and just understanding how to, you know, secure, you know, digital items, but it's worth it. It's worth it. And so people listening that, you know, would 100%. categorize themselves as, you know, non-technical or as, you know, less technical, don't turn off the podcast. Don't stop listening. Don't stop listening to the other episodes and think that Bitcoin is just a niche thing that, oh, isn't for you, because that's not true. That's fundamentally not true. That just means you need you need to understand the why more so that you're so that, and you also need to, you can also look at different options. Like there is a Bitcoin stack made for everyone, because and again, that's what's back to like thinking about it as software. There is a Bitcoin stack that is right for you. There is a wallet that is right for you. There is an exchange that's right for you and your business and, you know, your personal finance, you know, situation and your relationships that you have and your stage of life. There is a stack that's right for you. And you just need to rely on your own knowledge and rely on listening to the right people for building that stack that's right for you. But realizing, because back to the kind of overarching principle, you know, when you fix the money, you fix the world. So much of what humans and people are frustrated with each other about and division is created because the money is broken. The very foundation of, you know, society is broken, and we're all getting ripped off every single day in just a thousand cuts every single day, a little bit of the time. And that's why everyone feels like they're working harder and not getting ahead. So that's the why. And figuring out the tech and figuring out the stack that's right for you is something that can be accomplished and is getting better every day.
Oh yeah. And I'm amazed at the amount of resources that are out there are helping people to understand what I think is important. If I could talk to anyone else listening as well, is having confidence in your ability to learn, to adapt, and to increasingly understand things that are complicated. Just having that confidence in yourself to your understanding of something, even if it's very technical, that will allow you, that'll open up the possibility to gain knowledge and to gain competence in this really important area. And I'm speaking as a very non-technical person, but I've enjoyed this process of learning. And that's why it's the Bitcoin path. Like you have to start somewhere and you're going to fuck up. You're going to make these mistakes, but as long as you're sort of on that trajectory, it's going to help. But I really appreciate your focus on the why, because that's what's given me the impetus to gain some technical knowledge and actually run open source software and run my full node and start trying to exercise sovereignty in this way.
Yeah. Same. Yeah. Same thing happened to me too.
So what does it look like in Cali nowadays? Are you seeing a lot of responsiveness with local businesses? I know you mentioned that you are having a lot more success convincing brick and mortar businesses, more so than online businesses at this point, to kind of engage in Bitcoin.
Yeah. Yeah. So in Orange County, so I've lived in Orange County off and on the majority since 2013. And so Costa Mesa, and then just recently in Anaheim. And we've had an Orange County Bitcoin Network meetup running since May of 2019. And so it's been about, over a year, going on a year and a half since then. And it's just been growing and growing and growing. Like we have a consistent group of about 20 people that meet every single week. And then when we throw kind of larger events, they can top out at, 100, 110 people. And so that's been really cool. And it all comes from like the internet, from being on meetup.com and from being on Twitter and just constantly talking about it. That's how we've been growing. And it's other Bitcoiners, coming out of the woodwork and meeting people in real life and starting to do that. And then, they then bring their friends, sometime. But honestly, the main thing we're doing is just creating community so that, people, well, here's the trend. People have brought their spouses and their partners, and it's made them realize that, oh, there's other real people that are doing this. That's honestly been one of the biggest parts that come out of it. And I've been really thankful for that, is really watching them, like those spouses and partners, kind of connect about this also, because just like in anything, Bitcoin, it can be, a little bit of a hobby. like it's a very, and I don't think it's bad to call it a hobby or just an interest or, you know, whatever. Like, I think that's fine. And so there's all, like in most relationships, there will be the one person who's more interested in it than the other person. And then they kind of both just grow in it together. And so I think that's been a really powerful thing of kind of growing interest. And then also back to the whole, how there's a Bitcoin stack for everybody. There's a Bitcoin stack for everybody. So if you're the spouse or the partner that is, you know, less interested, you, like there's shopping apps and gift card apps and fun kind of more like game apps that you just let you play every day. And just having one on your phone helps you just continually remember that, you know, the world is going through this crazy monetization event and transition to a new like world reserve currency. And so, yeah, maybe you're not the one who's thinking about that constantly all the time and looking for the signs and watching how it's growing, but you can at least, you know, support the other people in your life that are, you know, watching this and seeing it happen and want to be active participants and activists in, you know, creating a better future. It's one way that you can just support them if you're interested in doing that. And so there is a Bitcoin stack for everybody. And I can like give some of the names just so you guys know, but then specifically about the businesses that really came this year. And that really came kind of back to, it came because of the lockdowns, because I kind of realized I had been comfortable thinking about Bitcoin just in the macro economic sense and my own personal investing sense. And I had always been kind of one of those Bitcoiners that said, you know, it's better to, you know, spend your weak money and save your strong money. And, you know, Bitcoin's not ready for commerce yet, but it will be one day. But through these lockdowns and watching the way the businesses are being treated, I kind of had to come to terms with, you know, Bitcoin is not happening in the future. Bitcoin's happening right now. And people don't need freedom in the future. They need freedom right now. And so then as I kind of opened my eyes and took a look around, I realized all the tools are available to do commerce with Bitcoin right now, today, right now, today. And so I just started learning the tools and putting the tools together. And the reason why I like sharing that is because there's also this tension inside Bitcoin between people that come at it from the investment front and people that come at it from the censorship resistant front. And so you'll hear about people that are mainly focused on kind of the investment case and the anti-inflation case. Inflation hedge case. And then you'll hear people that are more interested in the censorship resistance and, you know, Bitcoin is no third parties and it's for commerce. You know, it protects against deplatforming and it allows anybody to transact with anybody. And both those things are true. Both those things are foundationally 100% radically true. And that's why when you talk to different people, you'll get different answers on what Bitcoin is. And that's why there has to be podcast after podcast after podcast and books and books and books. In articles and articles and articles about it, is because both of those things are both radically, radically true. And that's what's crazy. That's what's creating, you know, that's why it's such a global thing and why it's such an interest for so many people. So to me, I love that about Bitcoin. And so to me, like I said, everything that's been crazy about 2020 forced me to kind of learn about the other side and the censorship resistance and the commerce side of Bitcoin. And I've been really thankful for that. Because I think this year really rounded out and doubled down my convictions on this being a thing that the world needs. So that story has obviously been a lot more well received with business owners this year that have watched their doors be closed and watched the rug get pulled out from under them on all these, you know, different things. Like even right now, you know, right now, California is deciding to go back into a second period of lockdowns. And so, you know, every small business restaurant is having to update their hours and buy more tents and continue to, you know, shuffle people around and only be at 50% capacity and all these different things. And so because of that, you know, hearing that there's a money update and there's a better money that allows you to, you know, do business with whoever you want, whenever you want, is definitely a more received right now. And then when you layer on top of it, so say your pizza shop. Okay, so your transactions aren't being censored and your credit card company isn't shutting you down. I understand that. Like pizza transactions are not being censored. However, you're still being stolen from inflation and you're overpaying the credit card companies because there's better ways to pay people now. And so you're still being stolen in two areas that Bitcoin fixes. And so just continuing to just be patient and lay out that case and explain that the tech is not that hard. And so once people are kind of all the way through that, and they, you know, if anyone who kind of didn't track with me through there, I can repeat some of that and just give more details. But after you generally understand that, what's the next normal thing that people bring up? Well, not everybody has Bitcoin. Like, how's this going to work? Nobody has Bitcoin. So that is solved with the main, like, the retail apps are getting better and better every day. So there's an app now in the United States specifically called Strike app that allows you to log in, you log your bank account up to it, and you can pay Lightning invoices and you can pay Bitcoin invoices straight from the app. And so this isn't, and again, what I said, all different Bitcoin apps have all these different kind of trade-offs. So you talk to different.
You can
Bitcoin
do that apps. From Stripe?
Yeah, from Strike. Yeah.
Strike. Okay.
Yeah. And that's what allows, the reason why this app is kind of groundbreaking this year is because it allows it, because it feels like a fiat app. It feels like Venmo. It feels like Cash App. And so kind of people that aren't interested in Bitcoin, they can shop at a merchant that is interested in accepting Bitcoin without having to change anything in their day-to-day life. They just simply download a new app that's going to feel just like every other app they already have. There's nothing, you don't have to learn about Bitcoin to use it. And so if you're the pizza shop, that you're the entrepreneur that is, you know, motivated to earn Bitcoin and motivated to start leaning into the future, you can offer a discount and just say, and it doesn't even have to be anything about Bitcoin. It's 5% off pizza when you pay with the Strike app. And period. That starts the conversation then in a great place to where, and then I think you'll be interested in how many customers will actually ask you to explain Bitcoin to them after you, you know, lead with, hey, you know, pay with Strike app and you get a discount. And then you explain why it's better money and you explain why your business mm-hmm. is choosing to do that. So that's the flow that I've been experienced that has been hitting, you know, pretty well this year.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's super exciting. You know, I think it's funny that we have like the Michael Saylors of the world jumping into Bitcoin with $500 million of cash reserves, just like huge swath of capital coming in. But really, at the same time, that's what's so cool is like this technology is serving both the massive companies who are willing, who see the value and see the potential for change, as well as the little guys who want to just store their small portion of value comparatively. I guess it's small portion of value for the future and actually engage in real money transactions. It's so cool. I agree.
I really like that Bitcoin serves both all socioeconomic classes also. And I can talk to this a little bit too, because I don't know if this is, if you've heard this from your listeners, but sometimes something I hear about Bitcoin is, okay, I hear what you're saying. It's hard for me to believe that Bitcoin is as democratic as you say it is, you know, because we're all being used to being ripped off and lied
with
to.
With the inequality.
Yeah. We're so being used to like ripped off and lied to, and just there will always be a ruling class. There will always be, you know, these elites pulling the strings. Who's to say that the Bitcoiners then just don't become the new ruling class and it's just the same as everyone? Like there's still the haves and the have nots. And so I've heard that. I don't know if you've heard that yet from your listeners, but I get that sometimes. And what I would try to answer to that is I would try to just show up with empathy and say, look, I understand what you're saying. I understand what you're saying. And regardless, and again, maybe when you listen to my stance on the lockdowns and things like that, you might not believe me that I can have empathy for a progressive view in as far as, you know, trying to lower wealth inequality and I'm just, you know, cold-hearted capitalist or whatever. I believe Bitcoin is going to completely reshape what the word capitalism and what the word socialism and what the word of any of this stuff even means. I think Bitcoin is new wine that deserves new wineskins. Bitcoin is a completely giant brand new paradigm that the world is going to have to wrestle with. And because the ruling class of today can no longer manipulate the bottom layer. Currently, the ruling class of today
manipulates the bottom layer of how money and how wealth works. The Cantillon effect, if you Google Cantillon effect and read what the Cantillon effect is, the people that receive the new money supply first receive the biggest benefit. And that's the way our country and the world currently works, is that the elite ruling class receive the fresh money supply straight from the central bank directly. And that gives them a giant leg up on the rest of society. And so under a Bitcoin standard, there will still be rich people and less rich people. There will always be people that have varying degrees of how much stuff and how much capital and just their current state in the world. That will always be there. However, the ruling class will no longer be able to rip off the very bottom layer. The government will no longer be able to choose winners and choose losers. And so then it'll be up to all of us. And in that sense, everyone benefits. Every single person benefits. And that's a gigantic claim that's hard for people to wrestle with, that Bitcoin is that democratic. But I believe that. And when you dig in and you learn about every single facet about Bitcoin and just how the mining works and, you know, how the block rewards and how the transaction rewards and like all of those things and just the second and third order effects of, you know, sound money, I haven't met anyone yet that's dug all the way down and been able to refute it.
Yeah, it seems very self-evident. Like where you have a mind for seeking truth and look at the facts critically, the more you can become familiar with the problems very, very easily. Like, it's no mystery. The powers that be might want it to be a mystery, but there is no mystery as to how things are actually working right now. The Federal Reserve, like, everything is in writing. You can look at the laws and see how the Federal Reserve interacts with the government and the American people. And it's very clear, like, how the American people have been getting ripped off over the last 100 years. So
And the other thing that's self-evident about it, when if you dig in and, you know, read books and watch YouTube and take advice, you know, from those with means in the country, all the advice is the same. Mm-hmm. It's acquire assets. Acquire assets is that's the path to like American wealth, is acquire assets. Because the ruling class and the rich class already knows that cash doesn't hold its value. And so acquire assets in the form of stocks and real estate. That is the way. And then why is there growing wealth inequality? Because, you know, workers live paycheck to paycheck and only hold their value in cash. And so it's, you can almost, I said this to a tweet someone this morning. You can almost learn more about Bitcoin by studying the way the system works right now than by even studying Bitcoin.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I wanted to touch, we're getting a little bit of a lag, but I think the recording and everything would be fine. I wanted to touch on that, like the inequality aspect of things. There's the opportunity is there for people to engage, to learn, and to help their fellow man. That opportunity is always there in front of us. What we're moving into, the world that we live in, is a natural place where there are fundamental laws. And if we're not opening up people, then we're not going to survive. That's just the nature of our existence. Being human, we have to live, you know, with our families. We have to go and forage for food, and you know, it's a natural process, and it really doesn't, what I think is fascinating is like the actual energy that it takes to gather enough food in a hunter-gatherer tribe is very minimal compared to the amount of time that people spend in their daily jobs now, like 40, 50 hour weeks pushing buttons, in meaningless positions in large organizations. Whereas, you know, in a hunter gatherer tribe, someone, the men might go and capture a woolly mammoth or bring, some great source of food for the tribe, and everyone just partakes and I think it's funny how Bitcoiners like glorify there's like this caveman aspect of their like mountain man, mm-hmm. caveman theme. And I think it's right. Like, we're kind of going back to the elements of nature in a way. Like Bitcoin, what's fascinating is it's like the most advanced the highest technological advancement of the human race in many ways, but it's returning us to like the fundamental aspect of nature.
Yeah.
And natural laws.
Yeah. Completely. I think about that a lot. I think about that a lot. And so, because I've been a sole proprietor, I'm a marketing consultant. I'm a marketing consultant, and I've worked on contract 1099 mm-hmm. for, you know, my whole career since being out of college. And so, if the hunter gatherer analogy or if the caveman analogy is too deep for people, I'll bring it up like just slightly. Bitcoin makes working, just the concept of working, great again. It makes it so your time is not being stolen. And so you can choose, because when the money works, then you can choose the right amount of work to do for the life that you want to live, rather than what you described of being on the hamster wheel of 40, 50, 60 hour weeks, you know, to keep up with everything. And so Bitcoin is going to make you know how we all have that fantasy? A lot of knowledge workers, just people that have day jobs or whatever, always have that fantasy of, you know, I should just start a bar. Like, that'd be so cool to just hang it all up and quit with all this bullshit and just start a bar. Like, that would just be so fun, right? Or people start a restaurant, start a coffee shop, or start whatever. And I would even, or even, you know, just simply buying a laundromat, you know, just running a normal, or a hardware store, you know, just running a normal business, or for an e-commerce perspective, just like running a website and making a little bit of money like that. Just hang it up and just run a normal small business. But just the barriers to doing that are so hard and so high for so many people because the money itself is broken. And so Bitcoin is going to open up more circumstances for more people to be able to just choose the life that's right for them and choose the amount of work that's right for them. Or even like being an Uber driver. You know, on a working money, mm-hmm. I would have absolutely no problem just being an Uber driver for, you know, 25 hours a week and just being comfortable, you know, because then you can just, you know, sit with yourself, you know, be content and not constantly be having to chase something. So I completely agree. And I think about this all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's really good to highlight too, like why it is that with Bitcoin, being an Uber driver would actually provide you a lot more value. You know, we touched on the aspect of inflation, and maybe it's just highlight like how in that particular case, someone working as an Uber driver, why is it that right now as they work as an Uber driver, they have to, it's like a spinning hamster wheel. They can't get anywhere. Standard. Why is it the case that that's different?
Yeah. So two parts to that. Two parts, potentially three. We'll see how I break it down. So the biggest overarching one is the inflation tax. So just, we are all paying the inflation tax. Every single year, the money that you make is worth less and you can buy less stuff with it. You can, you know, buy less stuff with it. So that's the first one that Bitcoin fixes. The second one is a lot of people blame Uber, the company that created the network effects, that they're like, oh, they are profiting off of the backs of these poor drivers and they're not passing along enough of the profits. You know, we need to protect workers more, that kind of things. Again, a big reason why Uber does that is to, like, because there's so many regulations and just things that they're constantly having to deal with, that so they have to pass, like, they have to squeeze, like, they're squeezing pennies too. So then they're squeezing, you know, the drivers. Mm-hmm. So fixing the money is going to rein in overregulation of companies, because the government will physically have less control over things. But then even taking a step past that, say Uber is taking advantage of their network effects. Okay. Bitcoin being open source money software, Uber is now, like, just the concept of building a driver network is no longer beholden to the credit card companies that are choosing to charge 3-4%, you know, in between transactions. So the credit cards are a tax on this giant thing of me finding someone, getting in their car and paying for a ride somewhere. And so we're cutting them out of the deal. Mm-hmm. And now you're able to go direct to the person. And so just because, like, so this already happens, not a ton, but you meet a driver over Uber and then, you know, you hire them straight up as your airport driver, you know, and then now you have their number and they will drive you and you arrange it peer to peer and you mm-hmm. pay them in whatever peer to peer method you want. Bitcoin, like, the software will create so many things just like that. And the credit cards are going to get cut out of the deal or be forced to change. And so that's why Bitcoin is better for workers. And that's why Bitcoin makes actually working, you know, great again. And then look, here's like a controversial one. And I always try to figure out how to say this correctly, but I end up just going for it every time. And so I'm on the record in multiple places saying this on camera and on video. Bitcoin makes collecting taxes harder, period. Like, and that's a reality. That's a reality. And so that excites some people and that scares some people. But that is a reality for users that want to lean into that. And so because Bitcoin is cash. Bitcoin is cash over the internet. It's a bearer instrument of the actual value. And so when I read no third parties, no middlemen, I read that as legitimately no third parties, no middlemen. And so we're cutting out every form of every other person that's making money off of me taking a ride with someone. Every single middleman that you can come up with in that circumstance has the potential to be undercut with Bitcoin. And that's the reason why it's a giant thing. And that's the reason why there's so many narratives about it.
Yeah, I really do, you know, as scary as it might seem to talk about, like, how government might be threatened by the new magic internet money, the reality is that the world is changing, and that we, as free individuals, have a lot more power now than we used to. That's the game has completely, fundamentally changed. And it's not like I'm going to go and tell everyone, like, stop paying your taxes, IRS, I'm not paying you anything. Like, I'm not going to, you know, lay in front of the fucking tank. But there is a very real, fundamental change to the relationship that the government has with its citizens. When I look around, when I look at Chicago, the city, I see, like, just massive, I see, like, a farm. You know, it's a large, attractive, hospitable environment for millennials to come and engage in commerce and to, you know, live their life. They have their restaurants and, you know, can live this nice, comfortable life, and live in their pods. And as long as they're kept there and they're doing what they're supposed to do, the leeching government and bureaucrats can kind of suck energy from them, and it's this game that they're trying to like attract as much capital, or as much humans, as many humans as possible. And what I think it really is, if you boil it down to like the basic level, is human energy farming. Like, we're just living in, yeah, I don't know. I have this view of like the Matrix, like,
yeah,
where the machines are just condensing humans into these like tiny little pods, as and keeping them as close together as possible so they can harness their energy. That's the ultimate end of what the nation state, the governments of today are trying to do. And that seems radical, but it's to me, that's like the natural progression, like Matrix farms.
100%. So I feel the exact same way, And I can't get it out of my head. And that's what I feel like when I'm driving around and just feeling all over the place. I feel the exact same way.
Yeah.
So I could just respond and say a bunch of things exactly in the same vein. What I want to do is, because both me and you both have our friends from Chicago and from California that may be progressive and may be like less down this path. And I want to explain to them, I'm always trying to find different language.
I don't have any progressive friends. No.
I want to find.
No, I'm kidding.
Bitcoin. Bitcoin has a powerful social justice message, and we need to share it, and it needs to be said. Like the power. I want so desperately for this country, for just people, for just populism and just social justice and whatever words. All our words need new language. We need new language to describe the type of revolution that we need, because we need a revolution. The country needs a revolution. And so whether you're using progressive language or conservative language or Matrix language or whatever language, everyone needs to work together to crush the establishment, period. And so anyone who's listening that, you know, doesn't relate with the Matrix message and doesn't relate with just the raw, you know, red meat, like the government could potentially be the problem message. Look, use whatever language you want and dig in on Bitcoin and join us in preaching, you know, power to the people. That, like, that's what I'm so, that I'm just fired up about every single day. And that's the reason why I spend so much time thinking about Bitcoin and trying to talk to other people about it. And, because it is a thing, because then, so number one, that's my like rallying cry of just asking people to join me and join us, regardless if our exact language matches the way that your brain analogies work. But then, on top of that, it's happening anyways. It's a fact. Like, it's a fact that the incentives for people to jump shift off of the old money to the more functioning, better money is happening. That trend is happening. And no amount of top-down management and top-down control and checking boxes and electing people or creating rules or doing whatever is going to affect that and change those incentives, because that is happening across the entire world. And so,
right.
It's you. So come at it from either way. Come at it from saying, please join us, but then also come at it from, this is a fact that's happening. So find the way to work in, you know, the ends that you would like to see, you know, the world come to, because Bitcoin is an incredible social justice tool, you know, as well. And I hope freedom fighters of all persuasions are the first to use it instead of the corporations and instead of the establishment.
Yeah, I certainly hope so as well. And the thing that I think I feel like a lot of social justice warriors might miss, or that they don't really connect with Bitcoin, is the fact that it requires personal responsibility and personal agency. So there even I sense this in myself sometimes, there where we look at the larger problems in the world and we think that, you know, we're victims. It's a see everything and think, well, fuck, I'm just fucked. There's no way that I can get ahead. And everything is just being manipulated. There's no hope to actually overcome this massive problem. And I'm a victim. And that mentality, you know, it's, though it's true, there with what Bitcoin does is it gives you the opportunity to opt out and to actually take action towards your own freedom. So like, I do see that happening a lot. But there's that tension, right? Like, fuck these guys. What the hell? Like, get on protests. But
I love that you brought that up, and I love that you said that, because Bitcoin is action. Bitcoin is the solution. And because something that you're right, people of all kinds are used to, you know, are guilty at times of waiting around and waiting for someone else to do it, or protesting and asking someone else to do it, or voting and asking someone else to do it. Whereas Bitcoin is a very, this is what I would say to even gold bugs and libertarians then too, is that you're constantly, you can't vote in the revolution. You can't vote in the revolution. And gold requires everyone to jump on board, like, with gold in order for it to effectively work. Whereas Bitcoin doesn't require everyone to jump on board for it to effectively work. There is no, like, it's already working with the, you'll hear a lot of people talk about the intransigent minority. It's already working. Bitcoin is working, and it's accomplishing these goals and these means for, you know, a bunch of people all around the entire world, and more people every single day. So Bitcoin, you can opt in. You can personally opt in to Bitcoin 24/7, 365, and it's a personal choice that you make. You're not voting once every other year. Like, that's not, and then for the rest of the time sitting around and complaining. No, you're actively doing it, and you're actively then making it a part of your life and moving forward with it. And so to that sense, Bitcoin is going to crush politics, and Bitcoin is going to crush every other form of just protesting and every other form of looking for solutions, because Bitcoin is the solution. Fix the money, fix the world. And so no matter what you're frustrated with, and want to hear a random one, here's a random one that will, you want to know how deep, I don't know if you brought it up on your podcast yet, but you want to know how deep it is. Look, everyone's complaining, like, climate change, right? Climate change is a gigantic problem. Okay. Let's go with that thesis that climate change is a gigantic problem. Renewable energy is currently not profitable. So what do you have to do? You have to tax people and then subsidize it and bring it back up to market. Okay. What if Bitcoin mining makes stranded renewable energy profitable? Because if you have a bunch of windmills out in the middle of nowhere that can't ship the energy to the city at the right price for homes to buy it, then they can, whenever, but the wind is blowing, but the city doesn't need the energy right now. So now you have all this wasted wind and all this wasted structures out there, right? You hook up Bitcoin miners to it. Bitcoin is going to make, because then the Bitcoin network needs energy every single day, 24/7, 365. And so the windmills are either pointed to the city at a profitable rate, or they're pointed towards the miners at a profitable rate right there, because that's a global trading commodity all the time, all the time, all the time. So it smooths out the energy market and is going to, like, breathe new life into the renewable energy market. So same story for solar, same story for wind, same story for hydro, all that stuff. Okay. And then back to the oil and gas industry. The oil and gas industry, currently a problem is that we have all these oil drills, drilling oil, drilling oil, drilling oil, which creates natural gas, right? But then same problem. You can't ship the natural gas to the city at the correct rate because the market price of natural gas, you know, doesn't bear it for certain places. So they literally burn off the gas at the top of the stacks, and then everyone complains about the ozone layer and all these things. Again, same thing. Cap the gas, run it through a generator, and then mine it at the source. And so now you have oil and gas companies that are able to stop flaring, and they're able to have a second commodity they can sell, which will make their companies more profitable. So that's how deep the second and third order effects of this whole entire thing go. And that's how you can start to kind of like just open your mind to just different narratives about what happens when, you know, we all of society upgrades the money.
Yeah, I love it. There's so many problems that are actively being solved with extremely intelligent solutions and profitable solutions, and people are making tons of money. People are getting rich. Like, it's a fucking gold rush. Like, there's a lot of value to be acquired, and because there's so much value to be provided to people by these problems being solved, it's fucking awesome. Like, it feels I get tingles down my spine when I hear, you know, people like you talk about this stuff, because it really is incredible to see things unfolding in this way. And I love like hearing guys like Robert Breedlove. I don't know if you've read some of his, mm-hmm. I'm sure you've read his articles and heard him talk, and I'm having him speak at this event that's coming up in December. And some of the things that he's saying are so fucking deep and philosophical and like foundational, spiritual, almost religious. But it fucking rings true. Like, it speaks to my soul, and I know that it speaks to other people's souls as well, because we resonate with truth. Like, that's the beauty of this. Like, as many people want to try to control us and to put us in this like energy farm, the reality is we are autonomous beings. We have the ability to make our own decisions. That's just fundamental to our human nature. So, like, the more information, the more people like acquire this information, like, it changes them, and it's so cool.
Yeah,
it gives me, I'm just excited because it gives me hope, man. Like, that,
yeah,
people can get this and we can change.
It gives me hope too. It gives me complete hope too. Bitcoin, if you're someone who, yeah, feels like you're in that energy farm, Bitcoin will breathe new hope and new energy into the way you feel. And if you just kind of have never thought about that you're in the middle of an energy farm, but you've kind of, you're just, there's this growing sense of realizing that you're, it's wrong. Something's wrong. Dig in on Bitcoin because, yeah, fix the money, fix the world.
100%. So you've been involved with the political process a lot in your experience, both as an activist and helping various political campaigns. And I know you mentioned even like being a part of the most recent Trump campaign, or one of the prior ones. Is that something that, and you're also an elected official in Orange County, mm-hmm. right? Is that something that I like your perspective of wanting to use it as a platform of engagement and, you know, speaking with people. For me personally, I've kind of withdrawn a lot of my thought energy from anything about politics, just lost cause. Totally. I'd love to hear your perspective on that. And
yeah. So I understand both perspectives. I completely understand both perspectives. And I understand people's desire to get involved and their desire to not be involved. Just speaking about my unique circumstance, I've always been involved in politics. Like, I was that kid in student government in high school. And so, and even taking it to a funny extreme, you know, in high school, same thing. There was kids that were interested in it. And then there were the kids that were like, no, that's bullshit. Like, why is Brian talking on the announcements? Like, this is dumb, like all this stuff anyways. So there's all, like, I don't know. That's nothing new to like, but I've always thought, but influence. So influence is a thing. I guess that's what I would bring all that back to. Influence is a thing. So because I had already dumped so much of my life into meeting these people and being a part of this crowd in Orange County and kind of knowing the ins and outs of the political process and being a part of it, I can speak to other people in that scenario and I can pull them out of the matrix that they're caught in. Because political consultants are not happy. Political consultants are not happy. They understand, like, they understand they're a leech on the system, and they understand that a lot of them are just mercenaries. And that's, like, I would say that to my friends right now, and they've heard me say that, you know, right now. And so same thing with politicians. A lot of them are just, you know, just it's self-interested, and it's just everything that you watch about any politics, you know, show on TV is literally almost exactly how it is. And so in that sense, I completely understand why people are disenfranchised with it. I hope to talk about Bitcoin, you know, in the meetings that I'm in and in the positions that I'm in, and elevate the conversation around Bitcoin to those people to let them know that this isn't a passing fad. This is a very real reality that is taking over the world. And just explaining to them that, look, like, politicians don't have they physically do not have the ability to fix the things that need to be fixed in the country. And so the faster that people come to that realization and start to search for other solutions outside of politics, you know, in my opinion, the better. And so, just because of the position that I'm in, I feel like I'll be able to kind of spread that message internally. But I completely understand why people are disenfranchised with it.
Yeah. I think that makes sense. Like the ideas getting out there, in any way, just interacting with people, being engaged in your community is always, I think, a good thing. And I would much rather have someone like you, you know, as a mayor, being involved in some sort of like city council or something, because truth needs to be spoken in those realms as well as anywhere else. So, and I'm not necessarily the one to do something like that. So more power to you. Like, I think we all have very differing interests and, you know, gifting. So, I commend you on that, man. That's great.
No, I appreciate it, dude. And even, you know, people are hearing me just kind of climb over it mentally right now. Everything's shifting so fast. Even the way my brain, you know, works over, like I said, this is weird. I ran for the seat and was elected before the lockdown started this year. So I don't take my seat until January of next year. And so honestly, everything that you're saying and the tensions that, you know, Marty was forcing me to grapple with and you're forcing me to grapple with, they're very real questions inside my head. And so I don't have the perfect answer. I'm just admitting to myself and to others that I don't have the perfect answer right now. I have, you know, the small amount of local influence that I do in one county in the country. And I want to use that to point people towards, you know, solutions that I believe can bring a better life for the most amount of people. But again, even me saying that, like, it just sounds like a politician. It sounds like every single thing that every other people, you know, already say. So, like, how does that even, what is the true differentiator of that? And honestly, here's the true differentiator of that. So the Orange County Bitcoin Network, like, honestly, physically brings more joy to my life than going to these, like, central committee meetings. Is the honest reality. And there's honestly more of a problem solving grassroots vibe at these Bitcoin meetups than there are at politics meetings. I honestly lose friends when I go to politics meetings. I don't gain friends. Like, and that's just a funny reality of the entire thing. And so I'm trying to figure out how to combine both of those efforts, you know, literally almost every day, trying to figure out that answer right now.
Yeah, man. It's a process everyone's going through for themselves. So, you know, enjoy the journey. I've high hopes for a powerful Orange County Citadel to set up a strong defense against the encroaching, you know, totalitarian state that's forming over there in the West Coast. I love California so much. I love Orange County. I love the beaches. I love surfing. I love all the people, the just enjoyment of life and the celebration of, you know, nature. It's a really special place. And with I'd love to get your thoughts about like Citadel Theory. Do you see, what are your personal like plans for, you know, engaging in your own freedom and your own self-sovereignty?
Yeah.
In that regard.
Yeah. So definitely subscribe to Citadel Theory largely. And the way that I do sometimes refer to Orange County, the entire county, you know, as a citadel. And that's what I explain about building the Bitcoin circular economy and, you know, helping Bitcoiners meet each other in real life. And there's this funny lockdowns. Like these lockdowns are the story of the year, because even taking Bitcoin out of it, simply finding a restaurant where 25 people are allowed to eat together has been an endeavor in finding a peer-to-peer marketplace. So again, even removing the concept of Bitcoin and all this other stuff that we've been talking about out of the equation, simply finding that has been an attempt at building a peer-to-peer marketplace, which is hilarious. And so
I'd love to find out how you did that, by the way, after.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think citadels mean when Bitcoiners talk about citadels is finding like-minded people. That is going to take lots of different forms. I love Orange County too. I love Orange County too. And I just bought a house, you know, in Anaheim. And so with my wife, and this is a very I am putting down roots. To me, the whole like leaving California thing is not a narrative that's in my head right now. And so to that, I just like, and the way that that functions into the Citadel thing is like, my house is a Citadel. My house is a Citadel, and my Bitcoin, you know, node runs inside my house. And I am interested in, you know, being paid in a peer-to-peer way with my, you know, validating node. And in that sense, like I want to meet with this group of Bitcoiners and this group of freedom fighters at local businesses that endorse freedom fighting. And so every day I'm attempting to build a network of people that are interested in the same outcomes that I'm interested in and see the incentives that I see to build a free society. And so I don't know. Like to me, so I guess all of that to say, I don't just want to be someone who's tweeting about building citadels. Like I want to be someone who is actively putting my own name on the line in talking about revolution in very real and sober terms. I don't just want to be a libertarian like or a freedom fighter who's just tweeting about freedom. Like I honestly, or just the philosophy of freedom. Like I honestly want to find a way to implement it in my own life right here in Orange County, California. And I want to meet other local people that are interested in doing that also. So obviously that's going to overlap a lot with Bitcoin, but even outside of that, I think there's a lot of Bitcoiners that don't even know they're going to be into Bitcoin yet and are just frustrated with politics and frustrated with the overreaching regulations. And so the more that people can work together to create freedom in their life is positive.
I wholeheartedly agree, man. And that's why I'm so grateful for, you know, the work you're doing. And it's very inspiring. Like it's inspiring me to try to do as much as I can where I'm at in Chicago, even though I'm not, you know, I love Chicago as well. It's a great city, but I don't see it as like a, it feels as though Chicago has fallen. It's kind of a lost cause in a lot of ways. So many people here that I care about and, you know, I would love to help and engage with. So there's this, it's a, it's a, it's a, it's a tension for me as well. And I'd love to get your thoughts on that. Like even thinking about presenting your own name and tying your name to these very radical ideas, that, you know, I like the idea of being a freedom fighter, but I also don't necessarily want to be a martyr or anything.
Totally. So to the point about Chicago, for both good questions and both, like, I, again, these are very real, like raw thoughts that are inside my head, and I'm not trying to present them in a way of, oh, I'll get clicks on the internet and, but not back it up in my personal life. I'm honestly trying to drive a very fine line on all of this of just being a real, you know, upfront person. But okay. So the point about Chicago, I watch a lot of YouTube, and I watch this YouTube channel called Nomad Capitalist, and he's a consultant, an expat who grew up in Ohio and left and, you know, became successful and started the company and then moved offshore and, you know, gave up his US citizenship. And so he coaches other people on how to do that and how to go where you're treated best and how to, you know, lower your taxes and increase your freedom and do all these things. And so something that he says about the US is, like, if you're shifting from state to state, like, you're still just tinkering at the edges. You're just tinkering at the edges. So if you're truly in a place where you're ready to experience a different side of life and really, you know, take, you know, if that's the package that works for you, is going offshore and experiencing different culture and really being radical and, like, doing that thing, then that's a thing. So that's one element of it. But then also there's the element of it of, regardless if you go out of the country or stay in the United States or pick any state, all of it is still kind of tinkering at the edges, because governments and fiat currencies and central banks are the same thing across the entire world. You know, the virus lockdown restrictions and these travel restrictions have been around the entire world. And it's all governed, you know, by lawyers and insurance and corporations and just layer after layer after layer of bureaucrats and lawyers and corporate and all this stuff. And so there's not, in that sense, there's no way to perfectly escape anything. And it's always a matter of trade-offs. And so, okay. And then again, people largely, like, understand where I'm coming from there. And then it's just coming from a personal perspective of the classic story of, the grass is not greener on the other side. The grass is greener where you water it. You know, that's just the classic cheesy way to say it. And so that's why I don't super, like, is it cool to think about moving to Idaho and moving to Wyoming and, like, you know, doing these things and, you know, living on a farm? Like, totally. That's fun. Super fun to think about. But that's not who I am as a person currently at this stage of my life. Someday, will I do that? And might I do that? And will it just continue to be this thing I brainstorm about? Absolutely, completely. However, at this stage where I'm at, you know, just building influence in local government and knowing the people around you and knowing how to actively live out, you know, the way that you view the world in whatever context you're in is the part of my brain and the part of my activities that I'm trying to sharpen right now. And so, like, I've never said it like this before, but maybe, like, the first citadel you have to build is the one that's inside your head. You have to fortify your own head first, and you have to fortify your own heart, and you have to fortify your own way of looking at the world so that you're not blown, you know, from side to side when things happen or whatever. Because so yeah, that, I think a lot about all that. The grass is not greener on the other side. There's problems and lockdowns everywhere you go. And then to the point of putting your own name on it, I have always, this is the politician, like, in me talking, in that I've always wanted to build my own name ID. Like, I like the idea of building my own name ID. Like, I've run BrianHarrington.org, you know, for, again, the past 6 or 7 years, and I run my own company, and it's just me. Like, I'm me, and that's it. And, like, it's kind of like what you see is what you get, like, kind of thing. And I will talk about whatever, but then also back up with action and just do it. And I've been fired and I've lost friends and I've probably lost out on opportunities that I, you know, don't even know that I lost out on because of choices that I've made in my life. But at the same time, I've also gained a lot of opportunities, and I understand that a lot of reasons why, you know, I get asked the questions that I do is because of, I put my thoughts out there. Like Twitter is just a resume. I saw this tweet, like Twitter is a resume for how you think. And I love that. I love that. And I like the idea of that's my resume of what I think. And so, like I said, I've been hired over Twitter more times than I've been hired over LinkedIn because it's a resume of how I think. And so.
They seem to be complete polar opposites. Like LinkedIn is this polished, presentable thing where everything is like perfectly catered to how you want to be presented. But then Twitter, you're reacting just like in the moment to whatever the fuck you're thinking and trying to the ideas that you're trying to engage with. So
totally
tends to bring out the truth.
What I try to remind myself too is like, dude, we're living in crazy times. So for everything that I say that people will try to say, oh, you know, you're crazy, or, you know, why would you say that out loud? Or, you know, oh my God, the IRS is going to knock on your door or whatever. Like, I mean, sorry. Like it's crazy out there. You know, turn on the TV, like turn on your social media and just watch, yeah. watch what's happening. Like, sorry that's the way that my brain is reacting to the situation, but I'm asking a very valid question, in my opinion. Why are we paying these people? So again, I'm sorry, like I don't have any specifics of, you know, what we should do about it other than, you know, get involved with Bitcoin and continue to figure out how it can impact your life and how peer-to-peer electronic internet money can impact your life and learn how to use it. But let the cards fall where they fall, because I don't appreciate the way the businesses are being treated and I don't appreciate the way that I'm being treated. And I don't know like what else to say.
Yeah. That's, we have to speak our truth. Like there's part of us that dies inside. At least when I feel like what I feel in my body, if I am lying is, I'm not perfect. Like I've lived parts of my life where I've lied a lot. And I died inside. Like it was fucking crippling to my entire being spiritually and mentally and everything. It's crazy. But the more I've focused on truth and trying to understand like the, you know, as much as possible, the nature of my existence and what I want to truly represent to the world and how I want to interact with other people, that's given me, you know, so much freedom and a sense of empowerment. What I like to think about is, I think it was Plato who was executed, right? Because he wouldn't recant in Alexandria. I've got to get this story straight before I start talking about it publicly, but I think it was a philosopher decided to, he was going to be executed. The power, the government governing authorities at that time were bringing charges against him for speaking in a way that contradicted the established norms at that time. And he decided he's not going to change anything about what he's saying. And the people who were bringing the charges against him were pleading with him like, no, just like change this one little thing. We like you. We don't want to kill you. And I'm very, very much paraphrasing this setup. It's like, he said something along the lines of, where it was almost an opportunity for him to exit reality in a true way, where he would not have to, he would not like compromise his own being, and as a result would exit reality freely or yeah. exit life, you know, die in that way.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy.
It's completely crazy. I mean, two things it makes me think of is, I mean, like Jesus was executed by the state.
Yeah.
And a lot of his followers were executed by the state because he was preaching freedom in the countryside, and he was preaching against the establishment in the countryside. And so they killed him. And it's to the point of just philosophers in general there. I never read super, I don't know my Plato and my Socrates and everything very deep, but I know the overarching theme of, you know, knowing yourself is the greatest thing you could ever work on, because yourself, because that's it. There's no other pinnacle. You know, what else would that was what they would sit around and ask themselves, you know, what else is there to work on? Period. Mm-hmm. Other than just understanding what this thing is inside my head and why I'm here, you know? And so that, but then also to mm-hmm. about Bitcoin, you know, when I survey the world, the most uncompromising philosophy driven people in the entire world, the most entrenched people in the entire world are Bitcoiners. And even when you get deep down in this thing and you learn about all this other crypto and all this other stuff, because they'll be like, oh, you'll hear this term like Bitcoin maximalists. And that's other crypto generalists trying to paint Bitcoiners as extreme and as uncompromising. And honestly, mm-hmm. like you're damn right. Like you're fucking damn right. Like uncompromising. Because yeah. in even outside of the crypto, you know, inside baseball jokes or whatever, this term Bitcoin maximalist, no one else is a maximalist about anything in the entire world. Politicians are hedging. Investment managers are hedging. You know, people that don't take their faith seriously and only think about their faith and spirituality on Sundays are hedging. You know, fair weather football fans are hedging. You know, people that are addicted to alcohol are hedging. People that are addicted to video games are hedging. Everyone else in the entire world is hedging. And so you're either addicted to something and you're looking to escape it, or you only think about spirituality at your most low and you don't think about it when life's going good, or just from a pure investment perspective, you're just like, oh, like let's just place some chips all around the board because I don't really have an opinion about anything that's happening in the world. We'll just grab a big scoop of everything. Like Bitcoiners like are thinking about life and like philosophy and why they're here at the very bottom level of just why am I here? How do my interactions with other people go? And why does the world not feel right? And I've never met a gigantic group of people that fired me up at that level for every single day like that. And so that is why. And to me, that's what that just a philosophy story inspired in me is because, sweet, kill me. Like, kill me. Throw me in jail. Like, I don't want to be a wage slave. Sorry, I said some mean words about the government. I don't want to be a wage slave. I don't want to work 40, 50, 60 hours a week and pay 35% in taxes to have for broken political promises. I just don't buy it. I don't buy it. I believe in a higher power too much that's not the reason why I'm here. That's not the reason why I'm alive at this very moment in November of 2020 to work a dead end job and pay taxes to people for broken political promises. I just fundamentally disagree with that and am willing to suffer the consequences of that belief.
Fully. And I think that people who see that as so radical, so you know, obscure, so scary that you might say something like that. The founders of our very country saw that part of our human existence to be able to be autonomous human beings and exert our own authority over our lives. That's the whole reason that people came to America, right?
Right. I think Bitcoin lines up. Bitcoin, like, in that, that's why so many people are rallying to this idea. So again, back to like keeping the friends and family like in focus is like, that's the reason why so many people are rallying to this idea, is because you look at it from secular philosophers and you're going to find, you know, you're going to find paths back to Bitcoin. You look at it through a lens of, you know, maybe different like spirituality, you're going to find a path back to Bitcoin. If you look at it from just pure economic incentives, you're going to find a path back to Bitcoin. The one you just brought up, like the American Revolution and the American founding, if you look at the principles that led to the American Revolution, the American founding, you're getting a path back to Bitcoin. And then you go listen to the naysayers, and the naysayers have like 6 or 7 stale things to say, the same things they've been saying since 2011, 2013, the whole entire time. That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy, because, and that's why the Bitcoin conversations do not get bogged down the way that political conversations do. Back to the whole hedging thing, the whole hedging. Political conversations get bogged down in so many 47 different directions of nuance that everyone just leaves the conversation hating each other and just like thinking other people are bad or like whatever. Bitcoin comes down to like 6 or 7 main stale talking points against it that the dumbest Bitcoiners can rebut all of them. And that's another crazy thing of just the simplicity of how much Bitcoin just works at an incentive level. The fact that the dumbest Bitcoiners can just talk circles around just these high intellectual economists and high intellectual technologists that refuse to understand. That's an amazing thing to me, and it's very humbling.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I was wondering, talking, I'd love to dig into this a little more. We're at, I think, an hour and a half right now. I just want to check if you're okay on time.
Yeah, no, I'm good.
Cool. With this idea of Bitcoin maximalism, you're very open. You're a Jesus follower. You have, you see him as the way, as the I'm trying to remember the way you phrase it. It was, helping you not to listen to the negative voice inside your head.
Yeah.
I have a very extensive religious background as well, in Christianity, and I don't necessarily want to get into that now, but one of the things that I experienced as a result of that is this, and this is very fresh. I'm kind of like, I just am very interested in hearing your thoughts about this. One of the things that I had come to realize at the end point of that journey was that a lot of my spiritual fervor, initial zeal for encountering God and learning more about Him and trying to share the gospel and love and fellowship with other people, what it became was building an edifice of mental construct of belief, irrefutable or an all-encompassing worldview that could not be shaken and that couldn't be questioned. And there's this balance of like, well, where I arrived at eventually was like, oh, I've built up this thing, but I can't question it, because if I question it, then like, well, I might go to hell or something if I become a non-believer. And so there's this ideological, I see almost this tension between, that's always there as we live life from like the tension between the ideological and then the mysterious questioning truth-seeking, the life-giving spirit that wants to just like dismantle and, you know, challenge things and break things down. That's a very broad like question, but I'd love to get your thoughts on that. Like, because sometimes I look at the Bitcoin community and I'm like, man, this is fucking awesome. I'm with you guys. But it's also like we're constructing this massive ideological edifice that, you know, that's really powerful and that's built upon truth.
Yeah.
But it does have this like religious fervor aspect to it as well. So
yeah. So completely.
Yeah, there's no question at the end of that. Yeah. But
no, so
yeah, I wonder what you think.
Absolutely. Like, I want to, whatever way I can say that, like, I've thought about all of that, and I've been with all of that. So none of that is weird. And no one listening that sees like a religious fervor aspect in Bitcoin either, like, that's not weird. And some people, you know, you'll look at that and you'll be turned off from it because, again, we've all been ripped off and lied to so many times. Like, what's people that have experienced, you know, going to church, what's the number one reason people stop following Jesus or stop believing in Christianity? Other Christians, you know, shitty Christians that were annoying and they didn't realize. And there was, so then a straight up comparison. Okay. Well, you guys, you know, this is like your thing or whatever, but you're no less shitty than my other regular friends. So therefore this is false and bullshit. Like, that's very logical, super logical, which is the number one reason why, you know, people don't become Christians and can't believe in Jesus story is because of other Christians. And then, so then that kind of turns, and the same thing happens anywhere, right? Like, whether you're, you know, being SoulCycle or Peloton, you're like, oh, SoulCycle and Peloton is the way to get skinny. Join this tribe, join this community, and it's the way to get skinny. And then some people get in, some people don't. And then some people have a bad experience and some people don't, because there's the in crowd and there's the out crowd, and then it doesn't work. And then so you move on. And then you try a different diet, and there's the in crowd and the out crowd, and then you move on. And then it's same thing with, you know, make money online courses. I like try this one and you get in and then you get out. And it's like, so in that, everyone's searching. But what's the constant through that whole entire thing? Something's missing in your life and you're looking for an answer to it. So that's constantly what's happening. So, and we've all just been ripped off. We've been ripped off by centralized, this will get a little buzzwordy, so we'll find a different way to say it, but you've been ripped off by centralized solutions. You've been ripped off by single point of failure solutions. If your understanding of Jesus and Christianity was based on that one church and based on those people, then there was a single point of failure that was always gonna get destroyed, and you were always gonna then fall out of understanding the underlying principles because you were relying on a single point of failure. Same thing with health and fitness. Like, you're not understanding the bottom level things of, you know, like, of just the way your body works and the way that your body breaks down energy and the way that your, you know, current hormones in your brain and like all the stuff that goes into how complex our, you know, body systems are, that can't be reduced. If you're trying to reduce that to, you know, pedal on this certain brand of bike, that's a single form, like that's a single point of failure, and you're going to be disenfranchised with that. Or, and then, so that's the thing, the power, what Jesus did when, like, this, the reason why believing in Jesus and understanding why God created the earth and why I'm alive right now comes back to, Jesus was preaching about freedom in the countryside, and then he was murdered by the state. And the state, but on the exact moment he died, the veil was ripped in half in the temple. And the veil was ripped in half, and that veil at the temple was what separated the Pharisees and the people from God. And so the before Jesus came, the way what would happen is if you wanted to talk to God, you would go to temple and you would talk to the Pharisee, and the Pharisee would go behind the curtain and they would talk to God for you on your behalf. And so there you had this intermediary, you had this single point of failure. When Jesus died, he said, you no longer have to talk to an intermediary, you can talk to me directly. And that's when he said, and that's the Holy Spirit, and he put the power of God inside of you. And look, and that's what I believe. And so that fun, that underlying principle of I can go directly to God means that no amount of bad news or FUD about Christianity or the terrible experiences that people have had at different churches or whatever, none of that foundationally affects my understanding of, you know, my one-on-one relationship with God, my peer-to-peer, you know, relationship with God. And honestly, then, like, and I don't know, again, this might be super fast pivots for people, but bringing that to Bitcoin, you're no longer relying on the central bankers. You're no longer relying on the politicians. You're no longer relying on intermediaries that are supposed to protect the value of your money. You're going direct to the underlying, you know, technology. You're going direct to the underlying source code of the money supply. And so, and you have the ability to self-validate that all the time, anytime that you want, and you can know, you know, where you stand, where you stand. And so that is why I see parallels in the two. And then also the reason why Bitcoin brings with it such a fervor is because what we already covered of it's very solution focused and personal focused rather than outward focused. It's not, it's, you can watch his great talks on voice versus exit. And the two ways you create change are voice and exit. You can give voice to the process and you can offer suggestions and you can offer your petitions and you can offer your votes. But when that fails, your only solution for creating change is to exit. And that's what the country did. And that's, or that's what the United States did, you know, when we were founded. And that's what, you know, the majority of civil wars and revolutions come down to is the petitions were not heard. And so we are exiting. And that, so that's why Bitcoin feels so foundational. That's why it feels so foundational. It's not an investment. Like, it's not a stock. It's not a, you know, all this other stuff. It's not any of that. It's a very foundational thing with a chance to change the world. So that's why it carries with it all the strong emotions that it does.
Yeah, I definitely see that. One other thing that it brings to mind is how Ralph Waldo Emerson's essay Self-Reliance. I'll send it to you if you haven't. It's one of the things that he says in it is really fascinating. He says, it's kind of like an aside, but he says in Stoicism, each member is the Stoic, but in Christendom, where is the Christian? It's just this idea that, like, with Bitcoin, each Bitcoiner is the Bitcoiner. There's no, there's no divorcing your like intellects to some school or sect. It's a practical thing that you engage in and you use in your life, and you know that you're building a life based on truth and honesty and verifiable exchange of value, of true value with other people.
Correct. And that's why the people that go to bat for Bitcoin go to bat for Bitcoin so hard, because they know that they hold the cards 100%. Yeah. They hold the cards 100% when you're going to bat for Bitcoin, because there's no, like, what Ralph Waldo Emerson, you know, saw in the church, he's, you know, Christians are, they're creating logical inconsistencies because they're trying to align themselves to a thing that they don't, there's going to be logical inconsistencies when you're trying to align yourself to another human, because humans are flawed. But with Bitcoin, and so same thing with politics. When you pick your candidate, they're only, best case, they're going to say things the way that you would say them 95% of the time. And you're going to have to squirm and rationalize the other 5%. Best case. A lot of times it's way lower than that. And then, so all that being said, but then also, so there's a ton of crossover between Christianity and Stoicism. And I love Stoicism. I'm not an expert in it, but if people want to read on Stoicism, I really like Ryan Holiday. This is kind of a good modern writer on Stoicism. And then there's a ton of Christianity and Stoicism overlap because the Bible teaches that that joy and your circumstances should be divorced from each other. Your joy is should not be reliant on your circumstances. And that's the foundation of what Stoicism is. So it teaches that. But then also to your point of individualism, I did a YouTube video on this earlier, again, during the lockdown. It's because a lot of it very much frustrates me that these churches closed and the pastors took the government recommendations to close down. That very much frustrates me because my understanding of Christianity is that it's one of freedom and it is one of self-reliance. And so I did a YouTube video on this. There's a verse in the Bible. There's a story where there's 100 sheep and 99 of them are safe in the field, but one of them gets lost. And Jesus, the shepherd, chooses to go find that one lost sheep. He chooses to risk the lives of the 99 and leave them open and bare in a field where they could be attacked and go find the one. And what that illustrates to me is that Jesus cares about you as an individual. Jesus is not doing crowd math on the life of one versus the life of the 99. He cares about you at a very individual, like, crucial level. And he would not have died on the cross, and he would not have ripped the veil in half, would not have given you direct access to God if he didn't care about you as an individual. And so, like, when I hear Christianity being preached in a way that's more interested in the feelings of the crowd rather than the feelings of the individual, that does not align with my understanding of the purpose of what we're doing here.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I think that that's really a crucial part of the message of Jesus that I hope more Christians will embrace is their and that was the driving factor that got me so interested in it was this idea that and a true experience, like a very true, real, tangible, verifiable experience for myself that I had access to the presence of God, without any sort of intermediary, without any kind of like church telling me how it needed to happen. And that set me on a trajectory that radically changed my life. I think that is an essential part of Jesus' message that we individual, you know, has the ultimate say. And if you treat the world as though every other individual has the ultimate say as well, you know, that makes a world where everyone gets along pretty well because you're not gonna say like, well, I'm the fucking boss. I know how you need to live your life and you better get in line or else I'm gonna fuck you up. Right. That's what worries me about all this collectivist bullshit going on. But I know I have hope that like truth will get out and more people realize the way of independence is a very like enlivening experience. It's a very free, it's a way to thrive. It's not like Jesus said, my yoke is easy and my burden is light.
Yeah.
And I'm fascinated by that. Like a lot of people are afraid of going out on their own and exerting their own sovereignty and their own freedom, but God is with you in that path. And I really feel God's presence in with this.
Yeah. Well, and that's what we talked about on the financial aspect of, you know, Bitcoin makes working part-time viable again. And it makes it just makes working any amount of time, part-time or full-time, whatever, viable again. It makes it light again. Like, so instead of dreading work, you can enjoy it because it is light. And so you're enjoying it from a financial perspective. You're enjoying it from, you know, spiritual perspective. And because all of that is because truth is aligned in your head. Truth is aligned in your head and you're not having to go to bat or rationalize things all the time. That's why we're all tired and just edgy and hate each other all the time, is because we're rationalizing what you said of, no, I'm the boss. So I'm going to be the boss in this circumstance in XYZ, exactly how it goes, but these carve outs for XYZ, these things, blah, 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 blah. But then on this day of the week or in this geography, you know, we'll let John do it. Like, you know, that constantly keeping up with all that rules and caveats and all that stuff that, again, then is constantly changing is a burden, a physical and mental and spiritual burden on you. And when you realize that there's an alternative to looking at the world like that and act and, you know, giving respect to a world like that, it is. It's contradictory. Like, it actually makes life easier and makes life lighter.
Brian, dude, thank you so much for coming on. I think that's a good place to end this discussion. It's been about getting close on 2 hours. I think both of us could just riff on this stuff for a long time, hopefully, and even in person sometime.
Yeah. No, I love it, man. Like, thank you so much. And just, yeah, thank you for making the effort to put this stuff on the internet and engage with people, because I think your influence matters and Bitcoin matters. And so I appreciate, you know, people listening and the opportunity to talk.
All right. I hope you guys enjoyed that talk with Brian. His passion for freedom is just contagious. Again, getting to hang out with him in California, I can attest to him being a real, just an authentic guy, a real freedom fighter. Proud to call him a friend, and really grateful for Brian coming on. And I'm really grateful to you guys for listening in. Be sure to check out more of what Brian is up to by following him on Twitter at Brian Harrington and on his website, BrianHarrington.org. And just a quick reminder to check out our Cosmic Deep Dive event coming up this weekend, December 12th and the 13th. It's going to be an amazing chance to just go deep into the rabbit hole with these amazing educators. You can learn more and register at CosmicDeepDive.com. And until next time, may you live a meaningful life and enjoy your freedom as a sovereign individual.